You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Wednesday, 12 March, we've got U.S. inflation data, 2:30 our time, expected 2.9% versus 3% previously. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. And on the show today, we've got Alex Dace from Thimble Wealth. Good ABSA results and very strong attack numbers. We'll touch on both of those briefly. Sean Wibberley, he is CEO Home Choice International. Good numbers from them. Fintech really doing great. Liquidity in the share is a challenge, however. And then Sini Shapakusami from Momentum Investments. Budget take two. Will we still get the VAT increase? This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines. MoneyWeb, new Nedbank CEO gets 70 million sign-on bonus. Total remuneration topped 106 million in 2024. In his defense, he had to give up 60 million when he left ABSA. Business day, JP Morgan downgrades SA equities on worries about economic reforms. We expect foreign investors to apply a wait-and-see approach, JP Morgan says. Morning markets, US was red, S&P down 0.75%, NASDAQ off 0.3%. East is mostly red, Sydney down 0.75%, Tokyo up 0.33%, Hong Kong down 0.6% and Tencent off 0.7%. Commodities green, gold futures 2,920, Brent $70.01, platinum 988, palladium 949. The rand is 18.24, Bitcoin 82,100. Top 40 opening call, green open 330 points or 0.4% higher.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Turning now with Alex Dace from Thimble Wealth. Alex, appreciate the early morning time. ABSA results coming through. A good set of numbers. I mean, from the bank that is perennially said to be the cheap one within the big four on the JSE, 10% up. South Africa doing much better for them. All in all, I thought good numbers.
Good morning, Simon. Yes, I mean, I think for ABSA it's a tale of two halves. So the first half was a very disappointing update. And then the second half, very impressive, as you say, also ahead of what consensus were expecting, right? So for me, a big one was that the ROEs was about 15.5 for H2, and the price of the book of the business is less than one. So that practically means that there is still re-rating potential in ABSA. And while earnings is growing 10% and you're getting a very nice dividend. So I think, yes, the set of results is quite good. Share price probably would have done better if we were in a better market environment. But considering we are quite risk-off globally and as well as locally, you know, we had a muted response to the share price.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I take your point. In a more risk-on, we would have perhaps had so more adventurous. We would have had better responses. Attack raising guidance for shareholder payouts. I mean, it really was a half year, really strong half year waterfall. City really working for them.
Yes, I think whatever viewers need to take in consideration, there's been quite a few corporate action here. So remember, they did the big PIC deal where they sold about 30% for $2.7 billion. Then they bought back 20% that they didn't own of Mall of Africa. At the same time, they also sold their stake in Mass, and they paid down debt. So all of these functions has played a role. So, but I think a big one is that the interest finance cost has come down substantially.
Yeah.
And that has led to a rebasing, yeah, because they include a full 6 months of this number compared to only, I think, 2 months the prior year. You'll probably will still see a good number for the full year, as I've guided, but after that, there will be more normalization in the numbers, right? So it's not all operationally gained, for example. But saying that, yes, they're doing well. Within the retail space specifically, I mean, Mall of Africa is pumping. Its vacancies, I think, is less than 1%. While the rest of his portfolio, there is room for improvement. I mean, due to have some assets in Pretoria as well as in Potchefstroom. And then if you look at the rest of the portfolio, they've got obviously logistics and office. It does seem like office has probably come to a bottom because valuations are quite flat. So we've been seeing quite evidence of that in a few companies now that office valuations have dropped. However, reversions, that means renewals are still quite negative. But then also in the logistics space, vacancies are a bit high, but there are one source for that. For example, we know Cell C, that's got a big, used to have a big office there on the highway. That's a space, but they've also built a couple of, call it spec and spec developments, which will probably be rented out, and you'll see the improvement there. So yes, overall, I think very good sales results. The interest coverage ratio is about 2.9, which is very good, a very low LTV. They've got quite a strong CapEx profile, and most likely will use joint ventures for that. But, you know, business is looking good. I'd expect that distributions will continue to grow, as I alluded to, high single digits post this period. And you'll probably see some form of NAV growth as well, especially if interest rates come down and we see some economic activity picking up.
Yeah. And you mentioned there in office, it looks like the worst is behind office. Not out of the woods, but certainly the worst is perhaps behind. Alex Dace and Thimble Wolf, appreciate the early morning time. Give your money the return at once without taking a flight with the Stanlib Global Select Fund, an offshore equity fund submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Sean Wibberley. He's CEO of Home Choice International. Results ending December for the full year saw revenue up 20.6%, HEPS up 27.3%, dividend up 16.9%. Sean, appreciate the time. I want to start with the retail sale business, which is perhaps the more traditional business that you have. Revenues there up 8.3%, 1.3 billion. Still, what, a third of your overall operations and doing well in what is a tough consumer environment out there.
Yes, thank you very much for having on your show. Retail has been through a turnaround in the last few years within the group. Mm-hmm. And last year, they got back into profit and they grew their bottom line PBT by sort of 85% up to 50 million. And what's driven the turnaround there is a substantial improvement in the quality of the customers they've taken on board mm-hmm. with new credit models, but also a drive into touch and feel small format showrooms. So last year, they grew those showrooms to 37. There's plans to grow them to 60 next year, or this year, and then to 100 in a couple of years. And customers are really appreciating for the first time in Home Choice's history to be able to touch and feel the goods rather than necessarily buying them, you know, from a catalog or online. So great engagement from that channel, and we're very excited about it.
As I understand, those sort of the touch and feels, and it's an interesting concept that you've sort of, online's there, but it sort of, I suppose, it aids the selling process. How many products can you get into one of those showrooms? Because they're relatively small format.
Yeah, they are small format, and what we found is we started this showroom strategy a few years back, and with very large format mm-hmm. covering a wide range of our products. And now we've got 250 square meters small format showrooms with four times the trading density. And customers are able to come in and we showcase what's seasonal. For example, our blankets. Customers mm-hmm. can touch and feel the full range, to feel the quality and look at the patterns and what have you. We dress up various bedrooms in the different styles. Mm. So customers can see the curated bedroom and then go and order it online or through an assistant in the stores. And then the goods get delivered a few days later for collection at that showroom. Okay.
The big growth is Weaver FinTech, new wish for you, two parts there. Let's start with the Just Pay Now. I think people are starting to becoming aware of it. You've got big names on board and you're getting really good adoption with this.
Yeah, I mean, the buy now, pay later trend, which started a few years ago overseas, has really taken root now in South Africa. We're booking in the PayJustNow business over 100,000 new customers every month. Wow. And it's viral communication, word of mouth, that mm-hmm. customers are sharing with their friends this new smart way to shop. Plus, customers are seeing the option to pay at the till, both in-store and online. And it's just a great way to pay. You pay a third now and then a third a month later and a third a month after that on your payday, and with no cost to the consumer other than, well, there's no cost. Well, you just divide by three. So it's a no-brainer. And so we're getting this viral adoption, and these customers are entering our ecosystem. And then we are leveraging the digital data on that customer to cross-sell our other financial products in the ecosystem, our lending and insurance products.
What struck me with it, because I'd seen a lot of the buy now, pay later, but it was always in an online environment. You're doing this in a physical in-store as well. I mean, pick and pay clothing, hypermarket for appliances and the like.
Correct. A game and other type of Cap mm-hmm. Union Mart. Customers will go to the till. They've signed up for PayJustNow using their app, loaded their debit card or credit card onto the platform. And then the consumer would go to the till in person at a store and scan the PayJustNow QR code, which would then affect the transaction and they walk out with the goods.
Gotcha. The other one is FinChoice. Short loans, you talk them almost like a credit card on your phone. Longer loans, funeral cover, again, doing really well, seeing significant growth.
Yeah, absolutely. So FinChoice has been around now for 18 years. It's our becoming an adult this year. And we have a Mobi Money product that does about a third of our disbursements on very short-term, 3 months of credit. Mm. Customers access it exclusively from their smartphone. And then we've got 6, 12, 24, and 36-month loans, which are more personal loans over longer terms and larger amounts, which we give to our better customers. And we have a low-end growth strategy to march customers through our product tenure so that we can see that they can engage with the credits and behave responsibly. And that business, we are leveraging the Pages Now business to then offer the PJN customers our credit and then our funeral and personal accident policies.
And how are bad debts? I mean, consumer, lots of reports that things got a little bit better in the last quarter of last year, but it's been tough being a South African consumer for a number of years.
It has. And, you know, one of the things in our business, because we are a relatively short-term lender against our peers in the marketplace, you know, our acquisition products, the ones we offer to first-time credit customers, are 3 or 6 months in duration. Mm. So if we book a bad pocket of customers, which can happen due to macro reasons or because we got our scorecard wrong, or that we find that the market sometimes tightens and then there's a bunch of customers that aren't being served by the market, they then come to us, which skews our risk metrics a bit. But we're able to then see the roll rates coming through from that cohort and then tighten. Whereas longer-term lenders tend to have their book loans over 2, 3, 4, 5 years, and you have to live with that customer and manage them from a collections point of view. We're able to pivot relatively quickly, which is helpful. But yes, I mean, the South African consumer has had COVID to deal with and then rising interest rates, and there's a threat of a 2 percentage point VAT increase as the talk of the town. So I've been asked a lot of questions about the macro and what we do about it. And frankly, we don't ignore it, but we realize that we can't do much about it. And we just focus on our customer and how she's paying us and how her affordability changes and then adapt our marketing and what we offer her accordingly.
Yeah. And as you say, that flexibility to respond with speed, but also the knowledge of the customers. They come through the Pages Now and then move into the FinChoice. We'll leave that there. Sean Ribley, CEO, HomeChoice International. Appreciate the time. Let your money benefit from experience with StanLib Asset Management. Find out about StanLib Global Select Fund, which follows an investment discipline that has delivered results for 3 decades.
MoneyWeb Now on the money.
Chatting with Sinisha Pakrasamy, Chief Economist at Momentum Investments. Sinisha, appreciate the time. Budget, take two. Hopefully it happens on the second attempt. Some thoughts from you. I mean, one of the key things is going to be infrastructure. Eskom is better. I know we've had some load shedding. Transnet and water, perhaps the new challenges, and to see how the minister can navigate, because of course both need some cash too.
100%. Thanks so much for having me, Simon. So yes, budget take two. You know, I think the stakes are quite high this time around to indeed deliver on a budget speech this time. You know, I think with budget take one, that not coming through gave people a bit of a feeling of, you know, the government of national unity is working to push back at certain policies that they don't believe is the best economic practice for society. But of course, you know, if we get another sort of delay in the budget, I think that's going to dampen confidence quite significantly. So I think, you know, at this stage, I think the government of national unity and the parties belonging to it, it is in their best interest to find middle ground in order to deliver a budget and instill a higher level of confidence, because I think that did take a little bit of a smack on the back of that initial delay. You know, as you mentioned, in terms of the structural reform efforts that have come through, we've seen a fair amount of positive news on the energy side, notwithstanding, you know, the recent bouts of load shedding. Mm-hmm. But even if we had to look at the duration of load shedding and the severity, it pales in comparison to what we experienced over 2022 and 2023. Again, making the point that, you know, energy security is on an upswing. In terms of the logistics space, I think it will be a couple of years before we see the private sector getting involved in earnest. I think a couple of things have come about, such as a renewed network statement talking about the tariff structure for the private sector to get involved. I think there are some issues still to be ironed out, such as the backlog of maintenance on many of these lines. Mm-hmm. And so it will take a couple of years for us to see some traction being built there. Nevertheless, I think that the railway volumes and port volumes have bottomed over the course of last year, and we should see some marginal improvement coming through. And then in terms of the water space, you know, I think this is going to be kind of the next big challenge that South Africans face. We heard in the ANC's January the 8th statement that water shedding could effectively replace load shedding in South Africa. But here again, I think we are starting to see some signs of positivity and, you know, the sense of urgency around government's need to fix the water infrastructure and the quality and distribution of water. I think what will come a very long way is government's attempts to ring fence the revenues for local municipalities that come from water and that come from energy, because it then means that a lot of that money can then be recirculated back into water and energy infrastructure, which of course wasn't the case before. So those revenues could have been used for any other function in local municipalities, such as wages, etc. Yeah. And I think by ring fencing those revenues, it does give us a secure pipeline of infrastructure projects that are likely to come about. We know that water was a key emphasis in phase one of Operation Vulindlela, you know, the project office that sits between National Treasury and the presidency. And we know that going into phase two, a lot of the projects in the water space will continue in order for us to get a higher level of water security and water quality in South Africa.
And then the big question, which was, and I don't know if it was a surprise to you, actually, if I remember, I was reading a report you put out, I think it was a surprise to you, was the proposed 2% VAT increase, which of course is why we're back for a take two. Your sense around that, I mean, there's a ton in the media, I don't know which way it's going to go, but I mean, in short answers, the finance minister's adamant he needs that almost 60 billion.
And this is the trouble, Simon. So, you know, there's quite a big revenue gap that has now emerged if we don't get a 2 percentage point increase in the VAT rate. And I do understand, you know, some arguments from government to say that, you know, value-added taxes was the best one to kind of target. Mm-hmm. If we look at our tax revenue base in South Africa, a very big chunk comes from personal income taxes. Another big chunk comes from company income taxes. And the third big allocation is from your value-added taxes. Now, with personal income taxes, we know that the marginal tax rate of 45% in South Africa exceeds most of the other upper middle income countries. And we know that the World Bank classifies us as such. So there again, you know, if we raise the personal income tax at that marginal bracket, you may not get all that much, first of all, because we have a very concentrated personal income tax base. But you could also then end up in that portion of what we call the Laffer curve, that even though you are raising your tax rate, you may not actually collect all that much revenue, because people then start to avoid tax payments. On the corporate income tax, not too long ago, I think it was in March of 2023, we saw that the company income tax rate actually lowered. And I think this intention is still there by government to say that we want to make South Africa's corporates more competitive on a global scale. And so I wouldn't necessarily see that as the best, you know, tax avenue to tap, because we would be shooting ourselves in the foot by making our South African corporates less competitive on a global scale. And that then, of course, leaves the value-added tax, which is quite a broad-based measure of collecting taxes. You know, government made the point that a lot of the spending in South Africa is, in fact, borne out by your higher income earning deciles. Mm-hmm. And by virtue of that, it means that a lot of the VAT that is collected comes from those income buckets. But I do think you'd need to shelter the effects on the more vulnerable of society. So, you know, expanding the number of food exempt items, as an example, ensuring that the social relief of distress grants and other forms of grant payments, you know, the increases here at least meet inflation, in order to shelter that harmful impact of that increase in the value-added tax. I think given, you know, the sizable gap that has now emerged in the fiscus on these, you know, numbers in the budget that never really came to fruition, does give us an indication that, you know, a couple of things need to be done in order to fill that gap. So, you know, perhaps we get something on the VAT side, but perhaps we also get some scaling back of the expenditure front. And I think we'll see, you know, a couple of levers being pulled. The one lever, as you earlier mentioned, that I hope they don't pull, is scaling back on the capital expenditure. Yeah. Because in South Africa, you know, our fixed investment spend as a ratio of GDP at below 15% punches way below the global average of around 26% and way below the upper middle income country of 34%. And this is really what we need to drive economic growth in South Africa. And by scaling back on CapEx, you know, we'll be doing ourselves a major disservice.
Yeah, it's that capital expenditures is in many ways so much of our challenges. We leave it there. Sintshi Pakosami, Chief Economist, Momentum Investments. Appreciate the time.
And that's our poll today. VAT increase. Our budget, let's assume it happens as planned at 2 o'clock. Will we get that VAT increase? Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn and Twitter. That's it for today. We're chatting with Sean Kelly of Parity Wealth Managers yesterday, talking market performance, US relative to the rest of the globe. We asked if you thought the US was heading for a bear market, which is 20% down. Just over 40% said yes, looking messy. A third said no idea, but scary. The rest said nah, it'll bounce from here. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. AI, structured product.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now. On the money.